Carol Weft at his office for our third session together on September 25th, 1996. Okay, let's test. Dr. Weft, I just want to get some things clear that we took down last time. You had mentioned that you had moved from the Hill to 3621 Whiten. Was that the home of your parents?
Yes, that's right.
Indefinitely, you didn't change it. That was your move to Squirrel Hill, period.
Well, yes, until my parents, when my father died, and then my mother moved over to the apartment in the Wendover.
But you were already gone from the home.
Yes, that's correct.
That's right.
Right.
Okay.
That's right, yes.
You also mentioned having become president of the YMCA. And
in
I
Pitt.
Don't know, Chip.
At the University of Pittsburgh.
I see.
We were talking about student activities in my days at Pitt.
I see. I thought it was the YMCA.
No, the University of Pittsburgh.
I see.
It was a very active organization, by the way, which sponsored many lectureships and programs. It was one of the most active and productive organizations among students for extracurricular activities at the University of Pittsburgh in those days.
Was that in contrast to Hillel?
There was no Hillel.
There was no Jewish student organization.
Now,
that's
recently,
interesting.
So the current Hillel trying to raise money, and they had contacted me, and I met with Rabbi Barbara Burson, and we're talking about, and the letter was sent out, I and a couple of other people from that era signed our names to the letter. And one of the things that came up during the discussion was to get across the fact that Hillel, you know, is a vibrant and necessary organization on Pitt's campus today, but to somehow, you know, let them know that it, you know, it did not exist at that time,
right.
And so on. No, there was no Jewish organization, except for the closest that there was were the Jewish fraternities and Jewish sororities.
Yes.
There were three Jewish sororities and four Jewish fraternities when I was there. Mm-hmm. And they did, I think, accomplish a great deal. That was part of their original purpose when these groups were founded back around the turn of the century and so on, was to provide, a focal point for Jewish students.
Right.
But I don't think, you know, that wasn't their sole purpose. It is interesting to reflect upon it that there were groups of various Christian denominations aside from the YMCA. I think there was the Newman Fellowship, which was a Catholic group. There was at least one Protestant organization, because I remember some people who were friends of mine being very active in them, and they worked in conjunction with a couple of the Protestant churches in the community. But there was no Jewish organization.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that you mentioned, you said that you were a concertmaster in the All-State Orchestra. And if I heard right, you said in medical school, while you were at medical school?
No, that's when I was in college.
Ah, while you were in college.
College, yes.
Okay. You also mentioned that while you were at med school, you moonlighted at different hospitals.
Third and fourth years of medical school at Pitt. Just at St. Francis General Hospital, I was what we called a junior intern, an extern, and we did get a small amount of money and supper if we wanted it.
Weren't you going to law school at night at that same time?
No, that did not happen. I went to law school after I finished my internship, and I was doing my residency in pathology.
Okay. Then I missed.
And that's when I was moonlighting, covering emergency rooms of three or four
different hospitals.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing you had mentioned too, that you campaigned for Hunt, and you spoke of your efforts to modify at that time the coroner's office. That's why you got in with this with Hunt.
That's
and
correct.
I wonder, what was the nature of the modification that you were attempting?
Well, the office was incredibly antiquated. They did not even have a microscope here. And that was an instrument that had been around for 300 years or more. They had no toxicology set up. They had one rather elderly, retired hospital pathologist whom they called upon to do occasional autopsies, and they were very limited in the number of cases in which they did. Just the obvious homicides and very few other cases. So I'd say probably they did less than 100 cases a year. Just give you an idea that we bring in now, we accept jurisdiction in over 2,000 cases, bring in close to 2,000 bodies and do autopsies in over 1,000. The others are examined externally. But I just give you this. The population was greater in those days, you know,
right,
as we've been losing population. That'll just give you some idea of what was not being done and what was being missed. So,
was there one coroner?
Oh, yeah, there's
like,
always
like
been
you,
one elected coroner.
Like you are?
Yes. Yeah,
oh, there was.
There's only one coroner.
I see.
Yeah.
You had said something about calling in several pathologists, and I thought maybe...
No. There's only one coroner pathologist to work for the coroner.
So it was operating here?
Pardon me?
It was operating here, coroner?
Oh, yeah, in the building where
but
we are
But was it
now.
Your kind of background, legal,
no,
medical?
No. The coroner for many years had been William McClellan, who was a dentist, But the fact that he knew a little bit of dentistry and a little bit of medicine didn't mean anything, because he really was worse than even the person who succeeded him when McClellan was elected as county commissioner. The guy that succeeded him was Joseph Dobbs, D-O-B-B-S, mm-hmm. And he had no training whatsoever. He had been a carpenter, and then he came to work for McClellan. And he at least, he didn't have the political arrogance of McClellan, and so he realized a little bit that some things had to be done, but it was too late, and also he was controlled and limited by McClellan, who became chairman of the Board of County Commissioners. Mm-hmm. So that's what that Medical Society's committee was about, and that's how I got involved then with a Hunt, who was nominated by the Republican Party,
right,
even though I was
right.
a Democrat. Because that's what opened the door and led to a significant political upset. You must remember, in 1965, Allegheny County and the city of Pittsburgh were not only overwhelmingly Democratic, but very well organized as Democratic political entities, because David Lawrence was a powerhouse, and then Joe Barr succeeded him. And in those days, there was, you know, party discipline, there was party organization, for better or worse, that's another subject. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, for a Republican to have won a countywide office was truly an amazing thing. You know, the next one wasn't until there was a big scandal in the district attorney's office that led to a Republican being elected. And then Bob Friend, top Pittsburgh Pirate pitcher as a sports celebrity.
Right.
And, but I mean, it took that kind of thing, scandal or major sports celebrity. Otherwise, Republicans never had a chance. So it just gives you an idea that our campaign really was successful
mm-hmm.
in getting across to the public what was needed here. So the modernization was badly needed, and I think I mentioned...
Did they make the changes that you thought about?
Well, then we, after we got in, sure, then we began, and we had to start from scratch.
Right.
We had to bring in equipment, and mm-hmm. did autopsies in the basement without any heat or anything. Some of the coldest days, we got a little a heater that we plugged into the wall and literally did autopsies in overcoats with the apron over the overcoat. Because, you know, through the months, see, we came in January 1st, 66, And we had to put in autopsy tables and equipment and so on, and the whole place upstairs was being gutted. We took out those, you know, those showcases I told you about where they would show bodies and so on. The whole thing was being literally gutted on the first floor. And so there was no place to work except down in the basement, which is just off the garage. And there's no heat or anything. We did have electricity. And I was down there working downstairs in that cellar for about 4 or 5 months.
You were. Yeah. Tell me, you also mentioned at our last contact that you were invited to run for governor of Pennsylvania.
Well, I said to you that I had my choice between governor and senator. That's in 1982 when the Democratic powers met in, might have been late 80, might have been late 81 actually, probably was late 81 because the campaign was in 82.
Right.
And we met there and, you know, in those days, the major political people would get together and to a great extent determine, you know, who the candidates would be, and or at least suggest them.
Right.
You still had to be accepted by the state committee and so on. So it was at such a meeting that I was asked if I would run. And I said sure, and I chose to run for senator.
And you were part of the state committee at that time?
I was a member
Democratic
of the state committee,
state
and I was
committee.
Head of the Allegheny County delegation to the state committee.
I see.
Right. They, the state committee is comprised of elected delegates. You don't realize this, but you actually vote for these people in even years when you're going to, you probably don't pay any attention,
no.
But you elect them. I mean, Democrat elects
right.
Democrats. I guess Republicans do the same thing. And then those people convene in Harrisburg 4 times a year for their meetings to deliberate on matters of a statewide concern. And at one of the meetings each year, the state committee endorses people to run for whatever statewide offices are up that year.
Mm-hmm.
And 1982, the governor, lieutenant governor, of course, and U.S. Senator were up. So those are statewide offices.
Right. Now, as coroner now, do you attend those?
I am not now a member of the state committee.
No, I see.
I wasn't there as... because I was coroner, I was there because I had been elected as a member of state committee, and then within the county delegation, I was elected as the chairman, and then I had also become chairman of the Allegheny County Democratic Committee.
I see. So that's
the
how
Democratic
you
Party in 78, the position which I held for 6 years to 1984.
Okay, now I want to get back and leave those. Those are the questions that I had at the time in regard to our last contact. I want to talk a little bit more about your personal life. First of all, I understand you have a mazel tov, 35 years of marriage.
No, it's 34.
34. Then I added.
Well, 35 coming. That's right, 35. Well, no, you're right. You're right. No, you're right. That's right.
Glad
I'm
you reminded him.
I'm sorry.
October 20th.
I'm wrong. And you're
you
right.
You
Jesus.
Better be
you're
ready.
You're right. 35. Yes, that's right. You're right. You're right.
I didn't know that you were married by Freehoff.
Yes.
Which was very special. But you had mentioned that Sigrid, your wife, you met at the airbase,
yes, right?
Right. I assume she was not Jewish.
That's right.
And I just wondered, what were your parents' reactions, if any,
well,
to your interest in a girl who was not?
They had no problem then in accepting her because they knew that she was already a meeting with a rabbi there in Montgomery, Alabama, and was getting ready for the formal, you know, conversion.
I see. So
and then she did meet with the rabbi. They're very nice rabbi, and then she continued with a different rabbi in Baltimore, when she was transferred. First, she got transferred. We arranged for them. She put in for a transfer, and she got it to Andrews Air Force Base, which is in Maryland. And then she got out of the service shortly thereafter. So, you know, there was not a problem.
Yeah, I wondered, because Rabbi Freehoff married you, that she probably had converted prior to the marriage.
Oh, sure, of course.
He would not have probably done it otherwise.
That's right, yeah.
So
he knew the rabbi personally in Baltimore. Uh-huh. I don't know if he knew the rabbi in Montgomery or not.
Tell me a little bit about your children. I don't know. I know you have four children. You mentioned it once. Could you tell us a little bit about their names, what they do, and so forth?
David is the eldest. He's living here in Pittsburgh. He's an attorney. Daniel is the second. He's a neurosurgeon. He's finishing his eighth year of training, his second year of fellowship at Yale, and he'll be going into private practice the spring of next year. He's married, and they have one daughter who's 4 months old. And then...
what is her name?
Sophie Faye, S-O-P-H-I-E. Faye, F-A-Y-E, Sophie Faye. And she's 4 months, she's four and a half, almost 5 months. And then Benjamin is the third one. He's here in Pittsburgh. And he's married. He's a director of public relations and development for the John Hines Graduate School of Public Policy at Carnegie Mellon University. They have two children, Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N, Dylan Nathan. He's now 2 years and 4 months old. And they have a daughter that's 4 and a half months old, and her name is Zoe, Z-O-E. Kayla, K-A-Y-L-A. And then the fourth child is my daughter, Ingrid. And she's in Pittsburgh. She's in her second year of residency in obstetrics and gynecology at West Penn Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Now, is your oldest son married?
No. He's not married, and Ingrid's not married. David is just recently 34. Danny just became 33, Benji is 31, and Ingrid is 28.
Mm-hmm. So, right?
Yeah.
So each of the children have a part of what you have had, medical or...
Well, two of them are doctors. One's a lawyer.
Right.
Benjamin is not a doctor or a lawyer. He had worked at the Pitt Health Center for a few years doing public relations there, and now he's at Carnegie Mellon. He's really a writer. He has a master's degree in English literature and writing from Stanford. And he's very interested in this stuff. In fact, Benjamin is the co-author with me of two books, one, Cause of Death, which came out about 5 years or so ago, and the other one that just came out this month, Grave Secrets, both published by Dutton and Penguin in hardback, and Cause of Death then came out in paperback. But Benjamin is a co-author with me on those two books.
That's
so he has interest in these medical legal matters, even though he is not a doctor or a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. And your oldest son, the lawyer, is not in politics, I assume.
Well,
just
he is
law.
Running next year,
he
as a matter
is.
Of fact, for Register of Wills. He's it's open and announced, and he's the election's not till next year. But one starts now to try to line up votes for the endorsement by the Democratic Committee people. So he's he's always had an interest. The decision to run for this office is his. There's a vacancy, so to speak. Jay Costa had been the Register of Wills. He was elected as state senator. So there's not an incumbent elected office holder as an acting person. The other thing I should mention, and you asked about David, is that now as we speak, in just a couple of weeks formally, my wife and David and I are opening up a new law office here in town on Wood Street at First Avenue, West Penn Building. So it'll be the Weck Law Firm, David Weck, Sigrid Weck, and me.
And you'll be able to practice?
Oh, yeah, I'm free to practice. I won't handle murder cases, obviously.
Right, right.
There's no conflict in any other kind of a case.
No, I'm thinking in terms of time.
Well, time. Yeah, well, David will be the principal person. Sigrid will be there full-time, too. And I will do as much as I can. And obviously, on all of the cases involving medical matters, I'll have my input there to guide and provide, counsel and so on and so forth. Personal injury cases, medical malpractice, cases involving doctors and hospitals, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, your wife got a law degree?
Yes, she did.
Because she was in the when you told us about it originally, she was doing someone at the hospital in the Air Force. When you first met her.
Oh, that was a long. Yeah, but you're talking
but what
no,
was,
history.
No, I thought maybe.
Well, she
had
joined
had
the Air Force to get her citizenship in 3 years instead of waiting 5.
Oh, so it was.
And then she worked as a translator for a while. She speaks about 7 or 8 languages, and then she got her finished up. She had all kinds of credits from France and Italy and Norway, but since she needed some more credits, so she got her degree at Pitt. Then she got a master's degree at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs. Paris International Affairs. In fact, she did her master's thesis on non-Jews who had gone to Israel to work and study. And she went over and spent a few months in Israel and then went on to Scandinavia and Finland and other places to interview people and so on. That was her her master's thesis. And then she went to Pitt Law School, and she got her law degree there, I guess, about 8 years ago.
I see. No, I misunderstood. I thought that when she was at the hospital, she was in some specific part of medical.
Well, she was assigned to the hospital.
Yeah,
but
that
no,
was
she,
not.
Yeah,
I
no.
see. That's why I wondered about the law.
No, people just got assigned, wherever.
Uh-huh. And so is she practicing now?
Oh, yes,
aside
she's practicing
from that new
now.
Office?
Oh, no, she's been practicing, yes,
uh-huh.
Right.
What
with
area
me, she's done different things, divorces, accidents, malpractice, but we felt that it would be good to do this together, and now was the right time.
It's interesting that your son feels comfortable working in an office with his parents.
Yeah, well, the decision is mostly his.
Right.
And obviously, if he didn't want to do this, we wouldn't be doing
that.
Right. I don't really need a law firm. Sigrid really doesn't need. I have a law firm, so to speak. I mean, me and Sigrid. But it's something that David really wants to have, and I think it's a very good idea because we have a chance to build a significant practice, and he will be the lead person, and obviously continue on after Sigrid and I have retired.
Is he in another area of law than your wife?
Well,
or does
you know, in law you can specialize by choice or practice, but it's not quite like in medicine, where you take these residency training programs in 4, 5, 6, 7 or 8 years, like my second son is doing. David really is a trial litigator. In other words, he likes to go into court and litigate matters. So it could be personal injury, it could be malpractice, it could be a commercial law thing. Mm-hmm. The kinds of things that take you into court to actually try cases and so on.
Where does he practice?
He's done some criminal work. Right now, he's been with Katerinsik and Salmon for 3 years, and he'll be wrapping up there in another week. He had been with Williams and Connolly in Washington, D.C. for 5 years, a very famous firm of Edward Bennett Williams and so on. That, you know, in fact, they're representing President Clinton right now, that firm. David had been there for 5 years.
I see. So he's had other experiences.
Yes.
Has your wife had a private office?
With me, yes.
Oh, with you.
Yeah.
Not here.
No. In private. Space up at the St. Francis Hospital, where she has a private office.
Do you have a medical practice now? Still?
Oh,
also?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm head of pathology at St. Francis.
Mm-hmm.
And have been since it opened up. Well, it was Central Medical Pavilion, then it was Central Medical Center and Hospital, and now it's Central, it's St. Francis Central. We're part of the St. Francis Health System as of 3 years or so ago. The hospital opened up in the summer of 74, and I've been the chairman of the Department of Pathology for all that time.
Is that in the hill? On the hill?
It's right across the street from the Civic Arena.
Yeah, that's right. When you said St. Francis, I was thinking of their
The Parent Hospital is in Lawrenceville, right. Yeah.
Right, but you're the head of pathology there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. Do you actually do work there?
Yes, sure.
You do have time.
I just go back and forth as needed between here and there. Long days, into nights, and evenings, so on. Sometimes I do evenings. And so my private work at the hospital is there, and my private work in pathology is there. I do the autopsies for Westmoreland, Fayette, Armstrong, and Greene counties. I do their medical legal autopsies for the coroners of those four counties. I also do private autopsies for families. Sometimes for governmental agencies. I also do autopsies for the organ transplant group. The acronym is CORE, C-O-R-E.
What does that
when
mean?
Somebody, well, it's I think it's called Center for Organ Recovery, whatever it is.
I see.
They, if somebody wills their organs or tissues, and they die outside a hospital, and so on. You have to do an examination to make sure that, you know, there's no tumor or infectious disease that would preclude the use of those organs and tissues. So they'll have me do autopsies. And then families, have been doing for many years, black lung cases, retired coal miners, because they have to, the widow and the attorney then have to have the information to proceed for a black lung claim. So I do a lot
that's
of
when it's private. That's what
that's
call
all. That's
family.
All private. That's referring to all these private.
Yeah, because I was just
wondering. They're all done at St. Francis Center.
I was just wondering why a family would have a private
autopsy. Well, sometimes they want to know whether someone had Alzheimer's. Sometimes they want to know if they had some other genetically predisposed disease. Sometimes they're unhappy about the medical care that was given.
And
sometimes they just want to know.
Yeah.
And sometimes they need to know for litigation. So it's a mixed bag.
Because sometimes the hospital asks.
Hospitals are supposed to ask
to
somebody. That's right.
Right.
Now, a lot of the autopsies I do, people have died outside hospitals, so the hospitals aren't
that's
involved.
Yeah.
And in a few cases, families don't want them done at the hospital because that's what they're unhappy about.
I see. So they want to.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're able to do that.
And then the coroner's cases, of course, have nothing to do with where the person died. It's up to the coroner of those counties to determine, just as I determine here. So it doesn't make a difference if somebody's died in a hospital. If it's a coroner's case, it's a coroner's case.
I
do the coroner's cases for those four counties.
Mm-hmm. Who pays for those?
They do. Those coroners. Mm-hmm. From their funds.
The court.
Well, they get their budgets, just like we have a budget. Only I have full-time pathologists here, and these people are paid as county employees. And these other counties, they're not big enough to have a full-time staff. They don't need it. So they pay on a independent contractual basis, X dollars per case.
Does that vary per case, or
I charge, it varies, other people in other parts of the state, I charge the same for the coroners. I charge a different amount for private cases. And even there, there'll be different between a black lung and a medical malpractice case. It'll be different if a body is exhumed, done on bodies, you know, that have been dead for years and years sometimes and so on. So the more complex the cases and so on, you know, then there will be some price variation.
Tell me, you were very busy all through your years, and I just wondered how you managed with your four children.
Well,
to be available
yeah.
at all to them because
yeah.
you were always well, going somewhere,
you're,
doing
no,
something.
You're quite right. I was very busy. And obviously, most of the responsibility fell on my wife, and she just, you know, was a very, very good mother and housekeeper. And we were fortunate then. Not right away, but after a couple, few years, my mother-in-law came to live with us,
mm-hmm.
a very lovely lady, and also my mother lived, you know, a couple blocks away. And with, you know, the two grandmothers, my wife, and then we had always had, you know, some day help.
But your children were fortunate to have their grandparents.
Yeah, but of course they were. They were.